This podcast was first broadcast on Fresh FM, the top of the South community access radio station. For more information on Fresh FM, as well as links to other great local podcasts, go on our website freshfm.net or download the accessmedia.nz app.
Hello and welcome. I'm Galen Pound and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is Dana Wensley. Dana wears many hats in her day-to-day life, including being the founder of this program. In 2015, Dana became the PEN representative for freedom of speech in New Zealand, a position she held until March this year, and it's PEN that we will be discussing today. Welcome back to Top Writers, Dana.
Hello, thanks for having me here.
Right, can you please tell us what is PEN?
Well, PEN is an international human rights organisation that actually started in 1921 in London, and it stands for Poets, Playwrights, Essayists and Novelists. And it was actually one of the first human rights organisations of its time, and it connects an international community of writers around the world. So it's a forum where writers really discuss their work and connect with each other, but the most important thing it does is actually represent writers around the world who are imprisoned for their work or who are abused or otherwise struggling to get their voice heard.
And how did you get involved?
That's a good question, actually. I think I was always aware of PEN, and I don't know where that came from, but I became interested in freedom of speech issues during my time in Canada, actually, for no particular reason other than maybe they're more prominently discussed there. And when I came back to New Zealand in 2013, I saw the New Zealand Society of Authors advertised for a freedom of speech spokesperson, and I was a member of the New Zealand Society of Authors, and I applied for the position and was interviewed and got the position there, which I was really, really pleased about because I just have a commitment to freedom of speech issues, and I think they're things that we need to make sure are always discussed and debated in the forefront of people's minds.
And we do need to stress it's a voluntary position. You do not get paid for it.
It was a 100% voluntary position, and it took up probably much more time than it should have. And I kind of made up the position as I went along because there wasn't really any job description as such.
And what did the role involve? Because the year you became the representative for New Zealand was the bombing of the French offices of Charlie Hebdo.
Charlie Hebdo, that's right, yeah. So first of all, and it transformed over time, it really did evolve as freedom of speech issues evolved in New Zealand. It became, initially I started writing columns for the New Zealand Author. I wrote a fortnightly piece for the e-journal that goes out for the New Zealand Society of Authors to other writers. I began to write columns for, I did one for the Otago Daily Times, the New Zealand Herald, and give talks and answer concerns from authors that were contacting me with issues around freedom of speech. Did some lunchtime talks as well. The New Zealand Society of Authors have different branches around New Zealand, and the Nelson branch is particularly active in terms of PEN. So I did some talks there. So it really became much more of an educative role and just being there to answer concerns and questions that authors had, and also the global issues that were happening around freedom of speech. I got alerts from PEN International. Their head office is in London, and they send alerts to me, and I would send them out through the networks.
So what were some of the lows of the job?
I think the lows of the job were definitely reading the case reports from PEN. Each year, PEN International puts together a report detailing writers in prison, writers that are killed, writers that are abused, writers who simply disappear. And reading those reports every year and seeing the trajectory, which was getting worse, was really one of the lows, I'd have to say. Particularly the plight of women is very concerning. There's one woman who I wrote about. She's a Mexican journalist, Veronica Villavazo. And, you know, she's struggled in Mexico. She's been the subject of abuse for writing about female femicide in Mexico. She has death threats. People threaten to rape her. It's just awful, the information that comes out about the abuse that she gets for just simply raising the issue of female femicide in Mexico, where 5,118 women have been murdered over a two-year period. And Mexico continues to have one of the worst statistics for freedom of speech globally. So there's definite lows. Reading about the plight of those people that whose voices wouldn't be heard if it wasn't for PEN, I suppose one of the hardest parts for me was also seeing how freedom of speech became used by a tool from the far right to further their cause. And if you defend freedom of speech, you must defend the right of all people to express their views from different perspectives, even those you find offensive. And in the end, that just became too hard for me to do. And I, you know, resigned from the position in March for personal reasons, but also because it just became too difficult to defend the far-right views and see freedom of speech used as a tool for their own purposes.
So when does freedom of speech cross over into hate speech?
That is a very tricky question. In some countries, there's actually guidelines and rules around that. In New Zealand, we have some sort of high-level direction from Films and Videos Act. It's a tricky one. That is what people always ask. But I think clearly there's instances when you know it and you see it. And there's instances when people are offensive, which isn't hate speech. And then there's a whole grey area in between, which is where the freedom of speech debate really happens, where it really counts to just have issues heard and debated and have our youth aware of issues around media literacy, to check the sources, to actually look at whether what they're reading is well balanced, to check, you know, who's saying what and why might they be saying it and who's funding them. So, you know, there's a whole lot that you have to unpack when you look at hate speech.
It's a very complicated area, and we probably need about half a dozen programs to go into it. So on to something more positive, your highs.
So the highs, yeah, I'd have to say that one of the highs was actually organising with you, Galen, the Courage Day, Courage Day events that we have been having in Nelson recently. Courage Day is held on the 15th of November each year, and it's the Day of the Imprisoned Writer. It's a day when all writers get together and they recognise and stand in solidarity with writers in other countries who aren't as fortunate as ourselves to be able to get their message and works out. So it involves readings of poets in prison, it involves music, it involves stories, it involves having poems read aloud from some stunning writers who are still imprisoned, and those actually hearing those poems read by your students would have to be one of my highs, because I read all of these poems and they're just in your head, but to actually hear them spoken in Nelson, written by someone overseas, it really actually was one of the total highs of job.
One of my highs with Courage Day was last year when on Courage Day the news that Barus Bachani had arrived in New Zealand after 6 years on Manus Island.
Yeah.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about him, and then I'll read something from his book?
That would be brilliant. Yeah, Barus Bachani is somebody that I started writing about pretty early on in my time at PEN. He is an Iranian national, a journalist, a human rights activist. He was subject to surveillance in Iran for teaching Farsi, the native dialect, to school children. And he fled Iran on the 13th of May 2013 and was rescued by the Australian Navy, whom he'd asked for asylum. But what happened, of course, is that he was taken to Manus Island Detention Centre. And during his time there, he started documenting human rights violations, which he passed on to the humanitarian research partners, who in turn passed the information on to the United Nations and its relevant agencies. So he was providing the voice of what was happening in the detention centre there, because journalists weren't allowed in. And what was remarkable is that he wrote a book, No Friend But the Mountains, which was translated from Farsi by an academic based in Sydney, actually, began translating it in 2016. And each chapter was made up of a series of texts, which were sorted into chapters. And so it was just incredible. I think it was through WhatsApp that it came out. So the whole process was amazing, but what's contained in that book No Friend But the Mountains is also quite remarkable, and having him actually come to New Zealand, and he now granted asylum here in July 2020 this year, was amazing. So if you read out a section of his book, I'd just love to hear it. Thanks.
Right, and I'd just like to say he is a fellow of Canterbury University. And just a warning with the book, when I got the book, I read it on a really rough ferry ride across the strait. Don't do that. It does not help your seasickness. Right, in this passage, he is talking about what it is to be a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
The prisoner is a piece of meat with a mind that is always moving between the darkest, dullest, and most worn-out scenes. In some moments, a particular image will suddenly emerge from his mind's most profound labyrinths. At this stage, he must face this both strange and familiar scene and clarify things for himself. At this very point, he begins a battle that may take months to settle down, for the vision to be subdued or eliminated. The mind of a prisoner is a brew of images that are sometimes contradictory, scenes constituted by his own philosophies and histories. The prisoner is a captive to his own life history, and all these isolated occurrences take shape in the unconscious during periods of solitude and silence. However, they also destroy his sense of self. Probably the life most worth living is a solitary one, a quiet life, a lively existence, and a glorious one. But what a bitter life that is. Life is such a magnificent thing. Life is such a terrifying thing. When a prisoner steps onto foreign territory and sees loneliness reflected on the fences of a forlorn prison, he sees himself, the one who is alone. The world with all its beauty and marvel comes crashing down over his head. Perhaps the world stands still then, and the prisoner must determine his destiny, come to terms with his life and the thousands of faces and images before his eyes. Loneliness creeps under his skin, until he suddenly realizes that he has enveloped him. He represents the last human being, naked and laid bare. He must answer the difficult questions of life. He must reveal who he is, what he is. He must answer why he is lost, why he is bewildered, why he is silent, why he does not answer. This realm of the mind is itself a prison. His existence is splintered like a dry piece of wood, bashed on the ground of a barren and vast desert. He is a small and rotting boat, a frightened boat without a paddle and unmanned. He is a boat on the silent ocean, an ocean the colour of milk. Millions of stars dispersed into the depths of the universe. All over the sky they glimmer. They challenge him. The horizon is the colour of blood. It's a landscape full of wonders, full of mystery, questions and challenges. It's a place that seems to move the prisoner unconsciously till he finds sanctuary with others who have shared the experience of suffering.
Mm. Thank you, Galen, for reading that out. That's beautiful to hear. And the extraordinary thing about the book is that it's a mixture of prose and poetry and journalism. And Bruce Bushani said that to describe life on Manus Island in the prison camp, journalism and journalistic language alone doesn't capture it. You have to have the full range of emotions, and I think you can hear that in that reading.
It is the most amazing book, and the silly thing is, while he was imprisoned on Manus Island, the book actually won an award from one of the leading universities
right.
in Australia. So.
And he couldn't go to receive the award.
Now, he's actually coming to Nelson. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that, please?
So the Nelson Festival is bringing him. And this year, October, I think it's the 23rd of October, there's a panel discussion on the Friday and a talk on the Thursday night. And it's actually partly funded by the Top of the South Writers, of which I'm a committee member. So I'm really pleased to see Bruce Bushani coming here to talk to us and be part of a panel discussion. and more details are going to come from the organisers soon.
And they will be available on the Top of the South website. And he is definitely a man very much worth supporting. All his life has been a battle. So let's just hope he can find some peace.
Yes.
In this country. Now, also coming up, we have Courage Day on the 15th of November, and the details for that will also be on our website. Now, the song you've chosen today, could you tell us what it is and a little bit about it, please?
Yeah, well, music has been very important to me, actually. I had a breast cancer diagnosis last year and 3 operations, and I actually found it very hard to read during that time. Partly because a lot of fiction involves death and dying and women with cancer and husbands losing wives and children losing parents. It's actually very, very bleak. I'd get halfway through a book and then someone would have cancer and I'd just throw it down. So I started listening to music a lot, and a wide range, pop and ballads, and even got onto rap for a while. And I could have chosen any song out of my eclectic repertoire, but I chose a song called I'm Gonna Lose You, and it's sung by Jasmine Thompson. And because the lyrics are, I won't take you for granted, you never know when we will run out of time. And that resonates with me personally, but I also think it probably resonates in this era of COVID at the moment, because we're all living through extraordinary times and we don't want to take anything for granted, and we've got to live our best lives possible and stand up for what we believe in. And there's no message more important than that.
Thank you. Let's listen to Jasmine Thompson, I'm Gonna Lose You.
I found myself dreaming in silver and gold, like a scene from a movie that every broken heart knows. We were walking on moonlight and you pulled me close. Split second and you disappeared, and I was all alone. I woke up in tears with you by my side, a breath of relief, and I realized no, we're not promised tomorrow, so I'm gonna love you like I'm gonna lose. Goodbye. So I'm gonna love you.
Thank you so much, Dana, for talking with us today and all the work that you've done to bring PEN matters to the attention of New Zealanders. More information about PEN can be found on its website. Also about Pachani's visit and Courage Day. I'm Galen Pound and you've been listening to Top Writers. A podcast of this program and upcoming events can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast available by funding the Access Media Project. Other great podcasts from Fresh FM are available through the accessmedia.nz app or our website freshfm.net.